Got my spare drop in the next bed. But it's nice to be back in this shirt again. I've tried it on 3 times and it just wouldn't go around. I quit smoking and gained 33 pounds and thought the world stopped loving me. I found out the world still loved me. I didn't love me anymore. You know, it's amazing how much we decide we don't love ourselves. I was examining today, sometimes people don't like you. And I'm aware sometimes people don't like me, and I think, well, that's okay, but there's times I don't like me either. So it's perfectly all right. And I'm sure you have times you don't care too much about yourself either. You know, you do things you don't like. But then when you stop and you think about it, and you start to add up, how much time do you spend not liking yourself versus how much time you spend enjoying being who you are, the person that you are? And if you ever really seriously weigh that, some of you would have to admit you're pretty deep in a hole when it comes down, and you wonder why the world treats you the way it does, and the world is only treating you according to what you're saying you are. And what you're saying you are is always pointing you in that direction, and that's why you always attract those same kind of people. That's why every man you ever met did that to you, didn't they? Every job you ever had, every boss always did that to you, didn't they? It always happens to you, doesn't it? When it rains, it pours. Amen. And the unconscious mind has one job, to prove that whatever you think is right. And the unconscious mind is working your law of attraction because it's going by what you're saying. And your unconscious mind doesn't have a sense of humor. I've told you this 3 months in a row. Your sense of mind doesn't have a sense of humor. When you say, I'm a jerk, the mind makes sure, the unconscious mind, to prove to you that you're a jerk because that's its job. And you will keep doing things that will prove you're a jerk. And every time you go to somebody's house, you'll be like Danny. You'll knock over a glass, break the soap dish, spill the wine. You can't take him anywhere, can you? Can you? Yours white.
He's getting better.
Well, but wasn't it expected of him to do that? Everywhere you took Danny, we all waited for him to do it, right? Then he did it, and then we all relaxed. Uh-huh. He had no choice. Do you understand? The man had no choice. If he wasn't afraid he was going to knock it over, he knew all we were programming him to knock it over. There's a lot of energy. And everybody programs right into what you say. Everybody takes their clue from you. Danny hasn't broken a glass at a party or spilled in a long time. But the last time he was at my house, he broke my soap dish. His unconscious mind will probably have him do that every time there's a gathering. But it kind of makes us all laugh. We kind of enjoy Danny being a jerk. If you know the sense of humor, I say that. Not ever in any way is an insult. If that's what you want to call the love and the humor and the play before us, go ahead. No one's ever gotten upset over him knocking anything over. Then I kind of wonder, how come you and like Ruby and I and Carol, he's been at your house and he's been over, he's been at all our houses. We've all had the spills from Danny. But everybody loves him, right? I mean, just loves him. I do. And then I wonder, why do we all love him when he does that? And I don't think anybody loves me if I did that. If I did that, people wouldn't love me. But when he does it, he doesn't act in such a way that you won't like him. He doesn't quickly blame someone else who pushed his arm, or my dog who just usually runs by and flips him. He doesn't blame anyone else. And I think when we enjoy each other, is when we don't blame anyone else for what we are. But more important than that, we stop blaming ourselves for what we are and start enjoying what we are. To turn that over to a positive mode. That maybe for a while you'll keep knocking over glasses. Well, you better learn to have some very clever lines if you're the type that knocks over glasses at party. Have some very clever lines because people are going to take their clue from you. And if you act like, oh God, I did it again, my whole life is over, I'll never make it, and you sit there on your little stew pot, you won't be invited to another party. You knock over the wine, I'm not talking about what I'm talking about. You knock over the wine glass, you make light of it, you do your best for restitution, you get up off your butt
You go to the kitchen where everybody has paper towels. You do an effort to mop it up, and you keep a little sense of humor about it. You don't place a big burden. You don't make somebody who's already grieving that you just broke their crystal, and they're getting over the fact that you just broke their glass, don't have time to comfort you from committing suicide. Anybody understand what I'm talking about tonight? Because I'm not talking about what you think I'm talking about. Hell with wine and glasses and parties. I'm talking about energies and attitudes. Attitudes. That's why Jesus gave us these, be these attitudes. Because if you have these attitudes, this will take you somewhere. It's your attitude about you that's getting you in trouble. It's how you see yourself and how you assume others see you. Not how they see you, how you assume. And then you fortune tell and then predict and you become a self-fulfilling prophet of doom. Have a good cover lines ready. Have a good sense of humor. Be quick to smile. Get involved with your inner faith. Because when a man doesn't have a spirit with him, he cannot make it. But when a man has his spirit, he has his courage, he has his faith, he has the tenacity, he has the power, when he still has his spirit. And you know how you have your spirit? Don't ever do anything that takes away your self-dignity. Because if you lose your dignity, or someone else convinces you that you have no dignity, you will lose your spirit. And without that spirit, you can't walk upright. Without that spirit, you don't have time to notice what the joy of life and friendship and family and church, just the simple joy of you and I knowing each other. I can't be any more thankful for anything that I am right now, that some of you with me have become very good friends. Some of you are still emotional problems that I don't know what to do with because you like to cry and pity pat and be upset and throw tantrums if you don't get your way or get upset if I get my way. And I figured, oh God, this isn't worth it. I just can't take any more of this crap. And then I turn around and I look out at services of some of the things you and I have seen each other through, and I realize some of us have become real solid friends to each other. We have become supportive of each other because some of us never take more than our turn at having breakdowns. There's a marvelous thing in the group. We give each other a turn, but if you take two turns in a row or three turns in a row, you're out. You hear me? Now you had your turn. Now relax for a while and let someone else have a turn. Don't be so selfish. Because you don't let someone have a turn, then you don't know what it is to be able to help, but able to heal. If you're going around crying all the time and saying, I need healing, you'll never know the joy of healing. And until you know the joy of healing, you cannot receive one. You will never get one till you give one. You'll never feel love till you give love. It's not possible. So let's take a good deep breath with each other tonight. Because we're going to draw closer and closer to the... See how dark it is now at 8 o'clock? And soon, up at the ranch, it's 40 degrees at night. Everything is dying. All the pretty flowers are going down into the seed. My Indian friend Swift Deer said to me, when you place a seed in the ground, is it not a death? But yet we know it's a life. And there's a season coming. We'll be going to be having a masquerade ball, and we're going to party and dance together, and you all better be there. I've gotten a little like Gene Scott. You all better be there. Or don't call yourself members or friends. I will see you at that hotel. The church makes $5 off your ticket, so don't think we're making a killing. It's $30 for the dinner and dance, and we are going to go dance the spooks away. It's a church holiday. This is where the goblins and everything, the harvest is brought in. Then we'll come to church and we'll celebrate Thanksgiving. And we'll enter a whole month of being thankful that we have this church and thankful that I know you and how you got into my life and thankful that Don is in my life and thankful that I've known Ruby as a daughter in my life. Missing children, she's been a daughter unto me. And I'll never forget the day I walked into a nightclub and you said from the stage, hi, Dad, and mentally sang my song, The Rose. I'll never forget that ever as long as I live. And then soon there'll be Christmas. And this church will change with color and singing and happiness. And we'll realize that there is spirituality. There is still the Christ light. There is still hope. There's still peace for mankind. And we'll celebrate and go right through this whole wonderful season together. Is there anything better to do? Do you know a better way to have fun? Or a better place to go? If you do, I'll go with you. If you don't, come with me. Thank you. You will catch me time after time. Sometimes when I talk to you, you think that if you let me, I'll get into your heart. If you let me, because it certainly is my goal. I've been here on this corner 17 years, and I've had people try to stare me down on my own pulpit and intimidate me just because I wanted to stand up and tell them I care about them.
And they just want to put out work for them.
And they come in here like, show me. And I used to be so afraid of them, and they're the people I used to stare at while I tried to speak. And I used to remember, I'd like to get you on a slow boat to China, melting your heart of stone. Remember that song, any of you? Am I all up there by myself? And some people's stones that have come in here have really, hearts have really turned to stone. But the problem is, they still bleed. With hearts of stone, man still bleeds. And I think the man who becomes a real bleeder is a man whose heart is made of stone, who will never allow himself to say what he feels, but knows he will never stop the inner bleeding, and knows that he has become a bleeder, and that you're literally sacrificing a lot of your life. The better part of our relationship will always be shared here, like this. You sitting there, me standing here. It won't be at dinner. It probably won't be at lunch. I doubt that we'll wake up in the morning together, worried about our breath. I don't think that I'll probably be your boss, and chances are you won't be mine. And where I live right now, there's no chance that you'll ever be my neighbor. And there's very little chance I'll ever be your neighbor. But yet we have this unique relationship that all of us, when we come here, I think as you look at me, I've got to be willing to let you stare as much as you want. And I have to have the confidence that what I really feel in my heart is what really I am talking about. And I must not be nervous if 100 people stare at me or 1,000 people stare at me when I talk. I would gladly be a minister and spend another 17 years on this corner doing the exact same thing, just so I can stand up here and at least be free of what people think, so I may express to them what I really feel. And it's kind of like maybe the whale in the ocean. No matter how polluted it is, the whale used to be able to hear clear around the ocean floor. Now he can't be heard clear around the world, but he still sings his song, and the whale song can be heard, and it's attractive to other whales oceans away. And as I sing my song and I speak of my heart, then I will attract people who feel likeness in their heart, who see earth the way I see earth, who knows that there can be a world peace, that knows that if we unite ourselves together, even this small church, and meditate and pray and think together, that our thought as it comes collectively does have an effect on the universe. You're no longer just an individual sitting there with your problem. Now you are a part of a church body. People out there single you as a single unit. You are a church body. So you enter a body larger than one you're into. And when you enter a body larger than yourself, you must be willing to give up the consciousness of self, of your little individual cell, without screaming all the time that I'm this little individual cell, I'm not the whole body. You must surrender to a larger body. You must surrender to your friends. You must surrender to your family. You must surrender to life that cradles you. You cannot pull yourself out. You cannot see yourself as an individual. You cannot continue to living through earth being afraid. Afraid you'll catch this. Afraid you'll catch that. If it's not AIDS, it's a heart attack. If it's not a heart attack, it's a cancer. If it's not cancer, it's something else. There will always be something afraid of, because we believe in fear. I have comforted too many people dying of cancer that made me feel good at their death because of what they saw. I have read too many patients who have died of AIDS and still spoke proudly of how they have lived. I have seen many people go quickly of a heart attack, and some of them lay forever in bed, making peace with their family and with life. No one has ever left this earth without making peace, if they had any sense at all. And it comes so natural to the dying, but it comes so laboriously to the living. For us to be willing to make peace. I'm not talking about world peace, but I'm talking about, how about keeping peace amongst your friendships? How about quit every little thing that Susan says, blowing it up and overgeneralizing and just magnifying and catastrophizing about what each other say? Let's not talk about
China, Russia, United States, and Lebanon, and hoping they'll all cooperate, or Jerusalem. Because let's talk about Jimmy and Gerald and Ann and Susan. Let's talk about your nations, as seeing each person as a nation, seeing yourself as the United Nations, seeing yourself over what friend said what, or what friend came to dinner and didn't even say thank you, or you did them this and they didn't do that, just looking for chances to spoil it. Just looking for chances. That part in us that is so afraid to surrender that we might be crushed, to allow ourselves to love something to such a degree that we would literally feel ourselves under its control. For us to lose control? Are you serious? Lose control? I would never lose control. We long to let our shoulders down. The expression to let our hair down. To let our stomachs relax and feel and pick up the vibrations around and about us. Do you know how many times that your body is holding in a state so it won't pick up the vibrations in places you are in the market and downtown on the freeway? You're literally holding yourself to try to stop. And when you can find people that you can go, oh, it's like when the refrigerator stops running. And you find yourself at home and you're in your living room and you're with people that you can go, oh, in front of. But then when we live with people and they're our friends, we have such walls between us and them, such overtones and undertones that we can't even relax with them, because if I agree to this, they'll think I mean this and this means that, and we don't know what it is to relax with anyone. Are you with me at all tonight? Oh, but we'll be spiritual. We're going to be very spiritual here. We're going to study Leadbeater or Belaski or Swedenborg or Edgar Cayce, and we're going to know it all, and it doesn't give a damn where the whole rest of the world is. The hell with the rest of the world. Hey, God, you and me. You see, there's only one problem with that. In God's eyes, there's no such thing as you. In God's eyes, we're all one in the spirit and the self-same energy. We're one spool of energy. Like in your eyes, I am one body. Go read what St. Paul heard to say about the hand can't say just because it doesn't want to be a part of the body that it isn't. Nor can the eye, nor can the ear, nor can the foot. They're all parts of the body. This body makes me up. Yet I've got all these individual cells. Now science says with their individual consciousness, all a miniature little universe in themselves, all willing to give up their ego so I can move and be, and they can be part of something far greater than themselves. Every cell in my body is living in the body of God. Even if I'm too stupid to live in the body of God, they're not. If they were that stupid, I wouldn't be here. I'd go to scratch my eye and I'd poke it out. I'd go to shake your hands and I'd probably grab the wrong thing. Say the devil made me do it. We are strange as human beings. I had planned a sermon for you to be very intellectual and very wise, and I couldn't come out on time because I had some very upsetting news on the phone about my family that disturbed me greatly. And I said to my sister, 7:30, damn you, why are you telling me this? And I've got to go to the altar in a half hour. Why are you telling me this? I can't call my other sister. I can't handle this. And all of a sudden, my sister didn't tell me about my other sister's problem, my problem. Now they've laid a problem. Do you know what you're doing to me before church? Do you know that I've got to go out and speak and you lay this trip on me? Do you understand what I'm telling you? Can you hear what I'm saying? I don't care what bad news she gave me that upset me so much. I made sure that whatever it is discomforted me and was more troublesome to me at that moment than anyone else. And I said, Damien, don't you dare try to pull that one. Don't you dare. And I said, I have all the time in the world I need to handle this. And I went to Carol and I got on the comm. I said, Carol, please notify Don that I might be a little bit late tonight. I got a family problem I got to solve. She said, how long will you be? I said, I don't know. But I know the Spirit will take care of, because there's times you leave the 99 and you go take care of the one. My little niece, Kathy, that came out here, well, she just told her mother she's pregnant. That just ended the whole family right there. My sister Rosemary insisted that she have an abortion. My godchild, Kathy, absolutely refuses and screamed at her mother that would be murder and she will not commit murder. And her mother, who is the most loving, tender girl you've ever met in your life, my sister Rosemary, who's so confused, said, if you don't have an abortion, then I will never speak to you again and we'll never have anything to do with each other again. And here this whole thing is going on over my little niece being pregnant. I don't think it's such a crime to be 17-year-old and pregnant. Now, people say, oh, he condones sex at 16. No, I don't. You see, I'm not a mother and I'm not a father. Therefore, I can look at life for reality. A mother and father doesn't want to see reality because they can't afford to know what's out there. The drugs, the peer, the pregnancy, alcoholism at 10 years old. They don't want to face reality. They put their child in a dream. For me, I know reality. To be 17 and pregnant is not to be isolated or alone anymore. It's no big deal to a lot of people. I think it's sorrowful that somebody isn't going to get to grow up and enjoy the part of life without taking on parenthood so soon, but the fact is it exists. I called up my sister and asked her, "What is your problem? Do you not think there's anything good in this? Is there no positive part of this? If my niece, my godchild, was married and you called me up and said Kathy was pregnant, you'd all be celebrating, wouldn't you? Because a child is going to be born. Well, if this is her decision, then you accept it. Can't we get to celebrate a child's going to be born?" I said, "Rosemary, I'm going to tell you something." Because she's crying because she's saying, "What did I do wrong? Should I have been more strict?" And I said, "I'm going to tell you something. You don't know me, Rosemary, because I was kicked out of my family's house. You were a change of life baby for mother. As you were a baby, I was old enough to get kicked out of the house, and I wasn't disowned. So you don't know much about me." But I told her, I said, "I remember the day mother looked at me and said, 'Tommy, there's no chapter in my book that covers you. You're not in my manual. I don't understand you. I can't help you. I love you.'" And I knew then that God gave me to the kindest, warmest, most loving mother I could ask for. Granted, my mother put me out of the house because my mother loved me so much that she figured that if she stopped talking to me, because I was a mama's boy, I was very ill as a child and learned to be a mama's boy, couldn't play sports because my heart was too bad. I became a mama's boy, and mother thought that her stopping talking to me would make me change. How often have we tried that on somebody? If I wasn't talked to, because my mother literally believed that I was going to go to hell. She loved me so much that she was willing to give up the relationship that was just as valuable to her as it was to me to stop me from going to hell. Now, it took me a long time to see the hologram of this experience, not just my side of it. When I realized that my mother favored me of all the children, that finally got admitted before she died. Do you know what it was for her? She carried me and nursed me through rheumatic fever, a bad heart. I was the one she fought to keep alive. If you can back away from all the troubled sea far enough in an airplane, you'd see a mirror. When you can back away off the experience, I saw more love for me from my mother, even though it was an outward sign of condemnation to everyone else. Are you still with me? But I know how she saw me. And I said, "Rosemary, I'm going to tell you something about your daughter. The time she spent with me, I learned to love her. She is so sensitive. She is so gentle. She is so kind. And she's very aware, but she's shy. She's a lot like me. She's different, and I see me in her. How do you know that this isn't the best thing to happen to her?" She says, "Oh, but her education, she isn't going to graduate." I said, "She never was interested in education. Maybe it's not important." "Well, she wants to marry this man, and I know she doesn't love him. They're only 17. I said, "Is there a better place for her to learn then? Let her learn with the husband's father. I don't care whether the marriage lasts. Let her marry him. Let her find out what it is to be a wife, what it is to be a mother, what it is to do the grocery shopping, what it is to keep the house. Let her learn with him. So when she gets over that at 17, she can look forward to a decent and good relationship without anybody putting guilt on her, or she'll never find one. Maybe this is what God wants her to learn. And maybe God could find this is the child that my sister, this child is so loved in such a good home. Donna's been in it, but she's suicidal. She got into drugs because of peer pressure of the kids in high school. She took herself off drugs when she came to California by herself, cleaned herself up, won't have anything to do with any part of them whatsoever, will not have abortions because of her moral state." I said, "Rosemary, do you realize this is a beautiful daughter? And that God maybe could not have given this girl to anyone else but you, who has pulled her through life and brought her this far? You don't give birth to their souls, just to their bodies." Then we got down to the point that was important, and I'm not just talking about what I'm talking about. And I said, "What bothers you
We have a Sister Marie who is the wicked witch of the north, wherever she comes, the east. She lives in the east. She is the wicked witch of the east. Now, she likes to ride around the family on her broom. Don knows this too. She causes more trouble. Well, if you can take the ride, you know, you've never been her victim. We all have got the marks in our necks. But it's Marie. It's just the way Marie is. And when it gets down to it, is my sister Rosemary is so concerned what my sister Marie is going to say to her, ha, 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 about her daughter who is 17 and pregnant, and at least I raised decent children. I stayed in the Catholic Church and prayed with my children. Wait till my sister Marie finds out 9 chances out of 10 her daughter's going to be a lesbian. I'm serious. I'll tell the truth. 9 chances out of 10, I'm going to watch Marie just fall to pieces. I said to my sister Rosemary, you stay with me tonight, because I'm crossing and dotting a lot of I's and crossing a lot of T's. And I said, now let's talk to Marie. As far as Marie is concerned, Marie. Tammy. I know you never heard me talk like that. Marie. That child of yours and the child in her womb is worth 10 Maries. And if you weren't so worried about what people would say, you would be rejoicing at your granddaughter or grandson that's about to be born. I said, Rosemary, I don't believe in religion anymore, and I know you don't, but I know you're still spiritual. And I said, I know that you'll hear me. How do you know that that child in your daughter's womb is not your future parent? How do you know that? For the continuation of the race and the family and the vibration or the energy of the family. How do you know that? I said, Rosemary, stop it. Just stop it. Because I have given my sister Catherine a message to give to my godchild, Kathy. She is welcomed out here. I'd be honored to have her as a daughter that I have never had. I would be so honored. He is welcome to come here. They can live in the guest house. I'll get him a job within a week. I'll force Bob Wakeman to make him a painter. You all know Bob Wakeman. And this church will give her the best wedding that was ever given by a church for any couple. And I said, if you're not proud, I am. My sister went to bed cryingly happy because no one had mentioned that this possibly could be good news. I said, Rosemary, out of all the family, I know my sister Catherine, and I know you a little. That's all I know from my family, from being kicked out of it. And I said, then you let my niece, who was my godchild by proxy, because I was never allowed to be at home, so somebody stood in for me because my sister Rosemary secretly made me her godfather on the records. She allowed her niece to come visit me. My niece's life totally changed when she came to this church. She told me she couldn't believe people could go to the party without the police coming. She couldn't believe that I let her sit there and we sit around after church and talk like adults and how we were so honest with each other and people didn't punch each other out and have fights. She went home absolutely boggled. I'd be glad to have her back. And I said, Rosemary, this is the only child I know in the whole family, and this child, who is my godchild, is about to have a child, and I feel that God has not skipped me by. I will still touch with my sister Catherine, my sister Rosemary, my niece Kathy, and her child. I have not been skipped. And I will hold a child in my hands that I've never been able to touch, my nieces or my nephews. I was never welcome. I sent them Christmas gifts. I've never heard from them. They have never written to me. I was ostracized. And I said, Rosemary, I'm warning you, not this time. I won't stand still for it. Not this time. This time, if you don't want it, it's my turn. And she giggled. Most important time of this girl's life is now, because the brain of her child will take its genetic structure from its mother. And how that mother thinks right now is so important to that child even before it's born, it's learning. And I wonder, why do we always have to see things bad? Why does a pregnant child have to unnerve a mother or a family? Why are things always wrong? Where is the Christian part of us
that is supposed to teach us to bend, that's supposed to teach us to flow, that's supposed to teach us to accept, that's supposed to give us a strength to stand there with each other, not play animal emotionalism. Who's hurt the most by this? This because of people will say about her daughter. What am I going to do? Leave her in school? People will make fun of her sister. What will Marie say? The hell with them. Who? Why? We have each other. Well, I'm worried about her. What will happen to her? I said, she's got you. She's got her sister, her Aunt Catherine. She's got me as her godfather. We're more than capable of taking care of her. Why does it become disastrous? Why do I become more upset of hearing this at 7:45 when I have to come to church and then my going like this and turning it away from a need in a young girl's heart? Do you know how many problems never got understood, solved, or you never knew why they were happening? You never saw the beauty in them because we're all too fast to go, oh, how that hurt me. No matter how distant of a ripple we were from its cause, some of us just cannot help but emotionalize on it, to depress ourselves on it, to affect ourselves by it, to dramatize. And then let other people know how wonderful we are, considering what we've been through. I'm not in bad shape for a man of 49, whatever that means. Do you understand me at all? You can metaphysic the world to death. You can intellectualize it to death until we understand, what do these teachings mean? What do these teachings do toward the quality of our life? If we're taught not to judge and not to condemn, if we're taught to share in each other's experiences, that these experiences are not negative, they are simply experiences. How you react to them may be negative. How somebody else reacts to it may be positive. My sister thinks it's disastrous news. I think it's good news. And we're both talking about the same thing. Why then not understand the metaphysics? Why make a thing bad before it's even happened? Why fortune tell on it? Why see disaster up ahead? Why not know that everything that is moving in divine intelligence? There's no good or there's no bad. There's experiences and there's great joy in sharing them with each other. And the best times in your life were maybe when you only had enough money for cereal, when you only had enough money maybe to split between the two of you when you first got together to go buy a sandwich. Remember when you moved in together and how you made something out of nothing? Until there was so much of it that you were concerned who was responsible for bringing it about. It was me who made all this. Oh yeah, you were nothing before I met you. Oh, before I met you, I thought you were great doing your little manicures at the beauty parlor. Well, you were not working for a year. I was the one who went and worked for a year. And there's so much, now there's something to fight over. Who was the greatest that put it there? And they don't understand. Nobody put it there. Not a body. We. Nothing happens alone. It happens when two people come together. And if you did manage to do it alone, it doesn't mean that you didn't do it with another person. It means you never recognized the person that did it with you. You never recognized the people that helped you make it. And when you're sitting there, you will be so lonely and so cold. You know why the castles in England aren't worth anything, or a castle isn't worth anything anywhere? They're only good in the spring and summer. You can't heat the suckers. There is no way you can heat those castles. Those big stone walls and floors and drafty halls. They are so cold, it's unbelievable. And some people are living in their castles in the middle of winter trying to put daffodils on the table. You hear me at all? You're all right just the way you are and the people you're with. It's the quality that you're going to put into it. Be metaphysical. Be aware of your thoughts. Be aware of your speech. Be aware of what you can do when you touch each other. Be aware of the body you function in, and make sure you're not the one that over-dramatizes and gets the group's attention or sympathy. There's a better way to get attention. Then let's be metaphysical with each other. If we were, there isn't anything that I could do that could upset you. And all the people that have left this church upset with me, who claim to have gone on and they have reverence in front of their name and they're so metaphysical, you're not metaphysical at all if you're still upset with me. You haven't understood the first thing of metaphysics. I don't have the power to upset a metaphysician. Physician, heal thyself. I'm not making you sick.
The way you act around me makes you sick. But I am not making you sick. Metaphysician, heal thyself. And if you say you're metaphysical and you live with someone who also comes to church with you, and then you weigh and you act like this with each other, I don't care how much you come to church. I don't care who you listen to. I don't care if you pay $400 to hear Jay-Z Knight. I don't care what you do. Nothing's going to change until you really do become metaphysical with each other. Until it's not the blame game. When you give up right and wrong game with each other. I'm not saying there's right and wrong in the world. I'm not talking about that. I'm playing the right and wrong game with each other. Give up the right and wrong game. Give up the blame and shame game. And you will not believe how fun it is to live with someone. How romantic it can be. And put the laughter and the humor back. Instead of these two serious people who say excuse me because they happen to bump each other in the kitchen. And that's about the most they've said to each other all night. When nobody has to be right or wrong, when nobody's better than anybody, and you let it be, and you let the spirit that is between you, the winds of the heaven dance between you, you'll keep your humor, you'll keep your love, and people don't have to work at loving each other. It comes so easy and so natural. And every time I hear someone stand up and say, oh, there's so much work to a good relationship, that's the biggest lie you've ever been told in your life. There is no work to a good relationship. None at all. It just perpetrates itself in its own wonderful energy. I remember when I was married, my wife was concerned that we didn't have any problems. Something was wrong. Our marriage wasn't working. People think if you're not growing together, so they go out and make things happen. And then all of a sudden you make something happen that's bigger than you can handle. You caused it so you could show them how wonderful you were as you jumped over the hurdle you just built. Then you step back to jump over this big thing you just made out of was to show them how great you were. I'll get over it. You smacked yourself right into the mountain you built. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Let's not try divinity until we've found out the great wonders of being human. Being humankind. Mankind. Terra. Not terrorism. Terra. Earth. Mankind. Then practice kindness with each other. Quit complaining about each other. Quit looking for things to get upset about with each other. Don't take everything so pure. It's all emotional. It's all human. You want to act metaphysical? Let it in your heart and be so. You'll have a peace that most people will go beyond their understanding, and they might think you're crazy or drunk or stoned, because the peace you have is going to go beyond all understanding. Oh, yes. I've always worn long shirts because I was in a monastery. When I was in school and in Catholic school, you always had to wear long sleeves, starch, and dress shirts. I've never had my arms exposed. So if you've never had it, you feel kind of funny with a short sleeve shirt on. There used to be rumors that when I used to get out here and speak, that I used to shoot up. And that I was so high, and that's how I could do this, until I used to pull my shirt, my sleeves up, and show the people that there were no track marks. And then I heard, well, he does it in his leg. I almost stopped being channeling so people wouldn't think I was on drugs. When Ruby was my secretary, they wondered, what did I want with that young girl? Even though she wrote in her diary that we were doing something. I almost died when I found that out. I said, Ruby, if your mother ever found this diary, I'd be in jail. She said, and I said, why did you do this? Well, everyone else had such wonderful stories and I didn't have any, so I just made this one up. And I looked at her, and she was this little kid, and I looked at her and I said, well, Ruby, it's a good one. It was, and I was honored, but I said, get that out of that diary. So then I stopped being with Ruby, and I took this 70-some-year-old woman I was living with over there, working for me and living with me, and they say, what's he doing with that old woman? So it didn't matter what he was doing to a young girl, what's he doing with that old woman, then what's he doing with Don, what's he doing with them? And I figured, why do you answer all these questions? Why do you... So you don't get high. People might talk. Don't be noticed. Don't stand out. Shh. Sit up straight. Be quiet. Get your elbows off the table. Put your stomach in. Don't swallow your food. Can't you do anything right? Sound familiar? They're ringing in empty halls up here. Then you allow the spirit in. There's such beautiful teachings today. Does science help when you open up your psychic abilities? Because we've closed down so much. And then we thought that being psychic is something wonderful. And we had lotus blossoms as a symbol to show people were open. And we had our crown chakras and they looked like lotus flowers. You remember all that 25 years ago? And everything was purple and lotus. And along come the scientists say, oh no, this isn't mysticism. This isn't it. Oh, it's there, but this isn't it. This is natural. These little psychic things you're doing, says Keith Irari from Stanford Research and the scientists, these are all natural abilities of everybody. You've just been so closed down. Don't make noise. Don't. If I don't look at you and you don't look at me, we won't see each other. So we've learned not to look at anyone. And we ask someone, what are you looking at me for? You even turn around to the person you love and say, why are you staring at me? I hate that when you stare at me. Well, I just think you're so cute. Well, don't stare at me. Sound familiar? You don't think I'm channeling when I talk like this, do you? What happened to church? I'm talking church. We're physical, mental, and spiritual, and they must work together beautifully, harmonically. We must know that the law of attraction is working. We don't like what we're getting, then stop putting out what we're putting out.